This is the Real Magic Podcast. Learn about great design and use it to get great results. Now your hosts, Greg Merrilees and Alan Nunez.
Hello, listener, and thank you for joining Greg and I today for the Real Magic Design Podcast, where we try and unpack our experience to help designers and business owners understand how to create amazing designs and work together to make design that is profitable. Me, I'm Alan from Pixel Partners HQ, and this is my co-host Greg from Studio One Design. How are you doing, Greg?
Good, buddy. How are you, Al?
Mate, I am flat out. it's a bit nuts at the moment.
What's been happening?
Mate, I've just got a lot of deadline critical work on at the moment, you know, and I'm starting to understand the value of saying no more often and faster, you know, because it builds up and I do.
Easier said than done.
It is easier said than done. It takes a high level of commitment. But I get this, you know, feeling in the pit of my stomach when I've got so many deadlines, my team is scrambling to get them done and I'm scrambling to get them done and I wonder how we're going to do it. I mean, we always manage to get it done. I'm sure every designer and every business owner out there knows that feeling of how on earth are we going to pull this off? And, you know, miracles do happen. We do make it come together. But look, I have to have my little rant. Is that all right? Can I have a rant?
Go for it.
So the first thing is, right, I've been saying no to a lot of customers, right? And because I'm saying no, I'm getting hounded even more. It's like it's almost counterintuitive. By pushing work away, more people want to work with me. It's like, that they think that we must be doing something good. And I don't know if we are doing something good or not, but the reality is we just don't have any more capacity. And the other thing is, right, and this goes out to everybody in the big wide world, right? ASAP is not a deadline, okay? I mean, we are doing so much deadline critical stuff. We're trying to schedule everything really thoroughly. And, you know, I'm getting emails like, oh, we need this ASAP, right? So I've set a rule in our business where ASAP to us is as soon as possible, which could be up to 2 weeks before we even look at it. If you need something quickly, you need to tell us what's the deadline, why do you need it by that time, you know? So a date and a time that you need it and why. Because if we understand your needs as a client, then we will deliver on those needs. But if it's ASAP because you forgot to send it to your boss yesterday, well, is the world going to end if you don't get it till tomorrow? Probably not, you know. So those who actually have press deadlines and other critical launches need to be, you know, put ahead of you, you know. So I feel like I'm a bit of a hard ass, but
I think it's good from the point of view that you're asking them what's the reason, you know, for the deadline, because that'll put it into perspective. Like, obviously, if it's for, you know, a product launch or you know, they might be running an event or whatever, there is a deadline for a reason. But if it's just because, you know, they want it done, then, you know, it's good to know the actual reason.
Yeah, and it's not like we won't put our best foot forward and get it done quickly, but we just need to know if something is going to blow up if it's not done by a certain time.
Yeah.
You know, so press deadlines, you know, a publication has to go to print, you know, and I have some publications that I work with on a regular basis for my clients, and I will call that publication and say, look, you know, we're in a real jam here. Can I have an extra 10 hours or 24 hours to deliver this? And I say, listen, here's the absolute cutoff. We need to have it by them. And we respect each other enough that we make sure we deliver on that when they give us that grace.
Yeah, so, understood. Yeah, cool. All
mate,
right.
How you about open? You, man? What are, yeah, okay. I feel so much better.
Awesome. Well, yeah.
What have you been up to?
We've, I'm just trying to, you know, do some marketing at the moment in my business. So running my first webinar, and there's a lot of preparation in that. And today's topic is images, like, you know, images in design, you know, how do you use them? And, you know, we'll go over the benefits or that sort of thing. But for me, running this webinar is all about using the right images to attract the attention of the prospects. So it's, yeah, it's challenging.
So that was not an audio webinar. It was a visual webinar where they could see a slide.
It's, yeah, the webinar, yeah, it's in a week as at the time of this recording. It's in about another week, and yeah, it will be a video, live screen share webinar.
Oh, that's going to be awesome. Where's my invite?
Well, I'll send you one, man. Yeah, James Franco is the co-host. So,
nice.
Yeah, we're doing the webinar on website design, like, you know, how to get the most out of your website.
Well, look, I'm sure this is going to be recorded. So, like, your webinar is going to be recorded. So maybe, just maybe, the listener might be lucky enough to jump into the show notes and see a recording of this webinar.
Yeah, we could
see
that,
how
yeah.
you've used images in your design, which is what we're talking about today.
So sure, man. Yep.
Should we get into it?
Let's get into it, buddy.
Okay. So, images and design, right? A lot of people get images and design confused, but they do work together, right? They're part and parcel. So I guess the first thing to get into is, how important are images in design today? What's your point of view on that?
Well, to me, it's absolutely crucial. You know, images, I mean, I've built my whole business based on, you know, using images and creating images. And, you know, when you think of, well, for me anyway, if I think of any product or, service or anything, I don't know, I just think of the imagery that was used in the marketing or the advertising, et cetera. And I think just, you know, generally our brains are tuned into remembering images. You know, if you think back to your childhood, you might have an image in your mind of, you know, an event or whatever the case is. And so I just think, you know, they're so important as a way of communicating, you know, a brand or even your thoughts.
Can I second that motion? Look, I agree. You know, I think we're wired for images. I mean, look, let's take recent times. Ladies and gentlemen, but you know, we grew up in the age of TV and computers and computer games and visual communication. You know,
yeah.
And we are hardcore wired, you know, to images and imagery in general. Images different to design. Design is the use of those images in a way that helps you remember the message. Even if you look historically, I mean, we used to draw pictures on the walls of caves, you know, so there's definitely something hardwired into us.
It's
a shame that not everybody in business uses images wisely.
Well, they don't. But, you know, if they use a good design firm, they probably will.
Hang on a minute. Like, it's not just the design firm. I mean, you can only work with what you're given. I mean, I remember seeing a job you were doing ages ago, and, my God, the website design was fabulous, but the images that the client had supplied kind of let it down. I mean, the images were okay, don't get me wrong, and they got it across, but they could have done so much better.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, sometimes we're bound to what the client wants us to use. So, yeah, you just have to work with what you got. But, we often create our own images as opposed to, like, even if we start with their image, we might just make it our own and give it a little bit of treatment that makes it look a little bit cooler or, you know, to tie in with the overall look and feel of our design.
Oh, look, I've got a couple of other points about how important images are in design, but I think you and I should dig just a little deeper on, you know, how you make images your own. Look, let's think about, you know, just general activity today and how things might have changed and pushed the visual mediums a bit further. I mean, we talk about images. We both agree that it's an integral part of business today and your branding. But if you have a look how people are interacting, I mean, Facebook, Pinterest, they're great examples of how powerful images could be. I mean, chat rooms and typed, you know, like text thread style chat has been around a long time. Facebook has photos and it's just a whole new world.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's changed a lot too recently. You know, there's more and more imagery used in the Facebook stream, for instance.
Well, that's probably to combat things like Pinterest. I mean, Pinterest is just images only.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And then look at things like classifieds. I mean, what happened to the good old trading post? You know, it was just text ads. Remember you had to count how many characters you would put in your ad because that's how you were charged?
Showing your age, buddy.
Oh, no, tell me about it.
I don't remember that, but just for the record.
Oh, rubbish. but now look at today. It's eBay. It's all those online classifieds where images are a big part. I mean, eBay used to charge per image. Now they try and give away image packs as part of this of you using them because they know that the more images that are up there, the better that classified ad is going to go. I mean, Amazon, they have lots of text on their pages, but every time they offer you something that somebody else has looked at that they think you might like, there's an image associated with it, you know. So obviously we need to be thinking about that as our business. Aside from, you know, why images are important, let's just talk about what should be important to you in a business. I mean, in my opinion, if you're going to have images, right, you should try and find a style that works for you and stick with it. You know, don't, no matter what people around you might be doing, you know, make it an integral part of your brand. Just like you wouldn't change your logo every 6 months, you shouldn't change the style of images that you're using regularly either.
Absolutely, man. You know, if you can be congruent across all of your touch points, you know, multiple touch points being, you know, your website, your social media pages, your print advertising, you know, whatever the case is, TV ads, etc. If it all has the same look and feel, then people are going to remember it easier.
Oh, absolutely. I have an interesting client that is a wholesaler. Right? And they supply printed catalogs to their resellers, right? And everybody else in the industry has product photos that are in situ, right? So they're in use in a home, okay? But my client, we made the decision 10 years ago that the product image, because the resellers didn't necessarily have the product in store, should be a minimum size printed and should have no background and should be large, sharp, and clear. Mm-hmm. Right. And we have stuck with that over 10 years and the business has 5x'd in that time, you know. So no more, it's probably 10x'd, right? And all the resellers say the same thing. It's really easy to find which product to show my customer from your catalog because everybody else has got these in situ shots where they might have two or three products in this scene and they have to hunt for what the product looks like. And because the product's been shrunk down to fit into the photo, you can't really see it, you know. So pick a style and stick to it. And in situ might work for you. You may not have product images as such, but whatever you do, make it consistent and stick with it and make that part of your branding.
Yeah, nice. Cool, man.
Awesome. So we know that images are important. I think everybody listening should know by now that we think images are important. So how about what about getting the images? What about selecting the images? I mean, where do we go to get images? What kind of options should we be considering? And what do you do, Greg?
Well, yeah, for starters, you know, in choosing an image, it needs to resonate with the target audience or, you know, the purpose of you know, the use of the image. So, for instance, you know, if you've been asked to design or you need an image for a certain design for a particular age group or demographic, you just need to make sure that that image relates to that demographic, you know. So if it's for people over 50, you know, you might not use an image of a young, fit person, you know, for instance, just for argument's sake.
I don't know, man. If I was over 50, I'd be wanting.
Yeah, I know you might want to look at them, but I'm just thinking on the fly. But you know I'm heading. Like, it needs to resonate with the audience.
Yeah, look, get an image that's appropriate. Oh my God, how often I see packaging and products that have an image that just does not relate in any way, shape, or form to either the product. I mean, I've got a classic example sitting right in front of me now. I've got a compact flash card that goes in my professional Nikon camera body, right? And it's got a photo of a flower on it. I'm like, why on earth do I need a flower on my camera compact flash card? You know, it just doesn't make sense. So really think it out. You know, think out what is it that you're trying to say with your image just as much as you're thinking out what is it I'm trying to say with my headline or my copy or my design or my colours. The image is just as important to the overall message.
Absolutely. And an image can say so much, you know. It can capture emotion and engage your audience instantly if you get the imagery right. You know, if you try and use imagery, you know, for advertising purposes, for instance, you like if it's in a Facebook feed or Google Ads or whatever the case is, you're going to be up against other images as well. So if you can have that emotional connection and think about color as well, just your ad or your image needs to stand out if it's in a crowded location.
Oh, boy, is imagery crowded today. You know, like everywhere we turn, there's an image. Look, I'm going to throw out a couple of things, right? So firstly, you know, stock image libraries, are they a good thing or a bad thing, Greg?
They're well, from my point of view, we use them. We subscribe to a stock library subscription service, and they're also bad because, you know, everybody, every man and their dog in the design industry subscribes to them as well. So you've got to use them in a way that's creative. Like, you just use them as a starting point and then make them your own. You know, we use them just to save time. So, you know, to give an example, we would take a photo, like a standard color photo, and we would colorize it. We would, you know, crop bits out of it, you know, change the overall look and feel so that by the end it doesn't look like the original image.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, stock images have their benefits and their downsides, you know. I mean, there's plenty out there, and you've got to consider your options, right, because there is a place for all these different types of images. You know, you can get really cheap stuff, you can get free stuff, and you can get really high-quality stuff, right? But you've got to have the right image for the right place, right? So, you know, sometimes a really nice, crisp, clean, super nicely done stock image is the appropriate thing. But, you know, sometimes on Facebook, that's not what you want. You want something that's a little more true to life, you know, and maybe some of the, and I don't want to discredit stock libraries out there, but there are some cheaper stock libraries out there that have some pretty bad imagery in the library. But in the right context, that imagery can actually be really good because it's not quite as polished, it's not quite as professional as some of the more expensive stock libraries. The other thing too is, you know, don't just pluck a stock image and use it. You know, like you say, apply effects to it. I mean, we do a lot of stuff where we compile images. So we might select 2, 3, 4 images, and they will be maybe a combination of photos and vector graphics,
yeah,
and bring them together. Photos, vector graphics, text, and logos, and bring them together to make something that is unique for the client. So you might start with 3 stock images, but you end up with something that is completely unique to that client that nobody else has. So, you know, in that application, it is a great way to have a photo of a flag flying in the air where you don't have to go and photograph the flag, and bringing it in and overlaying a digital texture, you know, and bringing these things together, like you say, colorizing them, that kind of stuff. And that's so important in so many different ways, right? I mean, we're talking about making them look unique, but we've got to remember that there's an online and an offline side to making them unique. So, you know, let's talk offline for a second. I mean, I've done campaigns where we've used photos that were really striking stock images and it had a particular model in it, and lo and behold, a week later in a local area, somebody else is using the same model on their campaign.
Yeah.
So we look a little silly if people see those two pieces side by side. So it needs to be unique, you know. And in that note, I often say, you know, dig a little deeper. You know, when you do a search in a stock library, don't take the first image that looks good to you. Dig deeper into the search results, because the first search results you see are the first search results everybody sees.
And I've actually seen it. I've seen, you know, advertising posters, you know, just in a local street where a chemist was using an image that I just recognized instantly because it's absolutely everywhere out there. Everybody uses this one image of this person doing whatever it was. So, yeah, like you said, dig deep for sure.
There's actually one female model that I know of that appears across so many stock libraries, and she's a very pretty little thing, but she is in so many photos. You know when you go in the stock library and you click the button that says show me more photos of this model?
Yeah, yeah.
She's just in every type of photo you could imagine, and she looks great. So people select that, and like you say, you know, you may be using an image that somebody else has already
used. And that would be embarrassing. So, yeah, just try and be a little bit more unique.
Yeah, dig a little deeper, go a little further, you know, spend the time, pay your design. Business owners, your designers need time to search for stock images. They don't just snap their finger and have 5 great stock images. It can take hours to search the stock libraries for what you need for a particular piece. So make sure they're paid accordingly, you know. And designers, I know sometimes we're tired on time, but that little extra effort. I mean, my tip is when you do a search, jump to the 5th page. Most people don't search past the 5th page.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we often give the you know, the stock library to our clients for them to search as well, which can save a lot of time.
Look, I've done that. I prefer to shortlist and then send them a shortlist because searching a stock library can be quite overwhelming.
Yeah, we send them like almost like some keywords, for instance.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
Yeah, look, definitely.
It just depends, so, you know, it depends how much effort you've already put in yourself, and then if you still can't get it right, then it's over to them.
Oh, definitely. And whether they've got the budget to have you search.
That's right, yeah.
You know? So that's offline, making them unique. But what about online? Here's a little twist for you, right? A lot of people grab stock images, rename them, and then use them on their website, okay? And now people think, oh, if I've renamed my image and I put my metadata in, then it's okay. It's mine. Right, it's unique. But the reality is that most of these images have another layer of metadata embedded in them.
How do you get around that?
Well, there are some software tools, but you kind of need to know what you're doing to be able to strip out the metadata. I mean, one way to do it is to start a new canvas in, say, Photoshop.
Exactly.
And then bring across the layers and recreate a whole new file from it.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, definitely. But there are tools out there that will completely strip all metadata from the image. But embedded in that are things like photographer's copyright, where the image was sourced from if you got it from a stock library, right? And, you know, be careful because it's going to come back and bite you later on. As Google gets better and better at looking for unique content, they're going to start looking at stock images and going, hey, these don't have as much value as something that somebody took from their own camera. And again, the camera has metadata embedded in it, so they can actually see, you know, what camera it was taken on, when it was taken, what exposure it was on. And these are things that people just don't realize are embedded in their image, you know.
Yeah.
So be vigilant, go over and above to make your images unique. It's not just online, it's not just about changing the file name and adding your own layer of metadata over the top in the website. It's about actually digging into the image's metadata. I mean, have you ever flicked open a image in Photoshop, Greg, and clicked on onto the properties?
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Yeah, we do it through Bridge mainly. Same sort of details there. But yeah, it's so much information. Like you said, what kind of lens they were using when they shot with that photo? When they shot that photo, I was surprised for the first time. But yeah, it's all for a good reason as well. I mean, they're trying to protect the rights of the photographers, et cetera, or the creator. So, but there's a lot of information there and a lot of people don't realize it's there.
Yeah. Look, I'm not saying strip it out to use images illegally. Right?
No, you're just talking for SEO purposes and so that Google don't, see you like everybody else.
Exactly. And we are talking about the designer taking the time to make the images unique, not just grabbing it and copying and pasting it into a design. Right. So, just take that extra little step and care for your client's best interest down the track.
Yeah.
Look, we've talked a bit about stock images. I'm going to make a statement. I am a photographer by trade going way, way, way back. I would say to any and every business owner out there, get a photographer as soon as you can. Make them part of your virtual marketing team. If you're a designer, have a couple of photographers you can call on a regular basis. It is worth every cent. People think a photo is a photo, right? But the reality is a good quality photographer can make a world of difference to the way your business is presented, whether it be images of your office, whether it be portrait shots of your staff, whether it be product photos, whether it be event photos. Good quality photos go a long, long, long way. So, Get a photographer on your staff.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. So look, and you talk about online and offline, and obviously when you're creating images for either, they have to have a totally different starting point and resolution.
Are you talking techie stuff?
Well, I think we need to a little bit.
Apologies to the business owners if this doesn't make sense, and designers out there, I'm sure this will make a lot of sense to you. But yes, you need to select the images that are right for the use, and you need to think into the future, So high resolution versus screen resolution. I mean, one's 300 dpi and the other's 72 dpi. Now, what most people don't realize is if you start with 72 dpi, that is for web, that is for screen use, TVs, that kind of stuff, you can't scale that up for print.
You can, but it'll look terrible.
yes, okay, I'll take that back. You can scale it up, but it will look terrible. It'll go all pixelated, so you'll see the blockiness of the image, right?
Yeah.
But you can take a 300 dpi image, which is for print, and scale it down for web, and
absolutely,
it'll remain crisp.
Yeah.
So And also too, you know, when you're looking at images, whether it be stock images or a commissioned photographer, think about orientation, you know. You've got to think about how you're using it. Your poor designer, if you commission a photographer and you don't get your designer involved in that process, you could end up with a whole heap of portrait style images, so vertical images, but your designer's designing a website and primarily needs landscape. And that's going to be a massive problem when it comes to using it, you know. So, and if there's an opportunity to do both, you know, get a landscape and a portrait of the same product, scene, whatever it might be, and add it to your library so you've got both available to you.
Yeah, that's a good tip, man. And also, you know, if you are creating, it might be an image, you know, that you're Photoshopping together from bits and pieces, and it might be for the purpose of a website, but just create it for print anyway at that sort of resolution, just in case it needs to be upscaled later for the client.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Start big. Can I tell you, I got an email today, Greg, from an unnamed SEO company.
Yep.
And we did some Google display ads for them. All right. Well, we did it for our client, right? And I've got an email back going, oh, we can't use these because the resolution is too high.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And I'm like, are you serious? You can't. You're doing Google display ads, yet you can't scale down an image. Like, the proportions are all correct. All that's happened is we send the original JPEG proof to our client in high resolution because they often zoom in and have a look at the detail, right? Sure. And if we send it to them in 72 dpi, we found we get complaints. Oh, it looks fuzzy. I can't, you know, it doesn't print nicely. I can't work it out, right? So, I was really taken back by that.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. Well, we have some clients that will print out our web designs and then they'll say, yeah, it looks too low res. It's like, well, it's not meant to be for print, you know. So anyway, yeah, it's just funny how people, you know, take a design and proof it.
Yeah, look, and I'd agree with you. Start big. You know, by default, I mean, you and I both have subscriptions to Stock Library, so we're not buying each image individually.
And we're going to give a tip here. There's a service out there called Death to Stock, and it might be .com. But, yeah, it's like really good photos taken by some really good photographers, but they're a little bit alternative and not so flashy and, you know, white background, all that sort of stuff. They're just really cool images. So check them out. They're all free.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. And what I was going to say is I agree with you. You know, start big. I mean, we can, when we have a subscription, and I'm sure plenty of designers out there have subscriptions, if you're a client, if you're a business owner, get your designer to go to the trouble of sorting, of finding the images and downloading them. Because if they've got a subscription, they can opt to download the high resolution image by default. Whereas if you're buying them image by image from some of these libraries,
cost a fortune.
The cost is really high to get the high resolution versus the low resolution. So people often opt for the cheaper one and get in trouble later on. So.
Yeah. And the other thing, we had this happen the other day where we did a design about a year ago for a client, and you know, it was for a website. Then they needed it. They just emailed me a few days ago and said, we need it for print. But I've gone to the, you know, the stock library and they've deleted it from the stock. And he's like, oh, help. I say, well, don't worry, because we downloaded the high res and, you know, it was problem solved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do it by default. I'm sure plenty of designers out there do it by default.
Yeah.
But business owners, be aware. You know, if you're searching for your own stock images, go high res. It's worth every cent because it will cost you far more later on if you don't have it. So, look, let's just – I'm going to shoot back over to our buddies, the photographers, you know. Photography, if you put it into perspective, high-quality photography is not expensive. It can cost you a lot at times depending on how big a shoot you need. But overall, those images are yours and they are nobody else's and nobody can take that away from you, you know. So find a good photographer.
There's nothing better than getting – the photos back from a professional photo shoot. It's exciting. You know, the result is so much better than what you could do yourself.
Absolutely. You know, and you know, come on, guys. And this goes to everybody again out there. And this is coming from me, the photographer, not from me on the design side. But don't ask photographers for cheap work. You know, if you ask for cheap work, they're just going to, just like a designer, they're going to cut some corners. They're going to do less, you know. If you're going to take the time and the money to invest in professional photography, get it right. It's worth every cent, You know, you are nuts to try and cut corners on that. You know, you've got a photographer there, you've got all your product, all your staff, and everything set up, and you've got, you know, the time allocated. Why cut a corner on it? You know, instead, talk to your photographer about getting the best value out of the shoot. Ask them, what more could you do for me in the time allocated? You know, so I've had people come to me and say, you know, I need a single product shot of each product. I said, well, no problems, but really, it'll only take me an extra hour to do three positions of the product so that you've got alternatives for later on down the track. And that, to me, is a better investment in your time and money with that photographer, you know. Also, talk to your photographer about, and I know I'm going to upset some photographers saying this, right, but ask them about having access to the raw images, right? So the raw images are like having negatives to your images. Yeah. Now, can the average business owner use those?
No,
absolutely not. But keep them on file because you don't know where that photographer is going to be later on down the track. You don't know if you want to make that image a little different or compile it differently to the way you're thinking about it today. And if you don't have the raw image, it can be just that little bit harder. Also things like, you know, ask your photographer to remove backgrounds, you know, pay them to go to that trouble to add clipping paths for the designers. And I know designers out there are going to all say, yippee, yes, please supply me images, product images with clipping paths, because that takes a huge amount of time and effort to do. But a professional photographer should have a team that can roll that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and not just clipping paths, but touching up the photos as well. I went to a photo shoot, and just to give you a quick example, and, you know, I know Photoshop pretty damn well, been using it for 15 years or thereabouts. And I thought I knew Photoshop, you know, like the back of my hand. And I watched this professional photographer touch up some photos that he did of myself and my wife. And it took him about 5 minutes, and it would have taken me at least half an hour, just because he's so used to the way he has his all his tools set up within Photoshop. And the results were just almost instant. It was really cool to watch.
Oh, yeah. Look, I've got Pixel Partners has an imaging department, and all we do is post-production for other professional photographers.
Yeah, right.
Everything from high-end fashion through to real estate work through to product images. Right?
Nice.
And these guys are phenomenal. Now, I've been working in Photoshop since I was, I don't know, maybe 18 years old. So pre-digital, right? And I fancy myself as pretty damn good, and I watch these guys and they are just phenomenal. Like, I send them stuff and it comes back so quickly and done so well that, you know, because I use them for my photographic businesses. You know, I send all our post-production out to my team at Pixel Partners to do it because they do such a damn good job. And look, that's an interesting point, right? This is not just for professional photographers. So from a designer's point of view and a business owner's point of view, ask the photographer to do that work. Don't cut that corner. They are going to be better at it than you are, right? It's going to save time and money in the long term. But if you are going to opt for DIY, and let me say, right, there are some awesome DIY options out there. I mean, the level of quality coming out of, you know, sub-$1,000 SLR cameras today,
like
domestic SLRs, is just astronomical, you know. I mean,
especially when you, you know, pair it up with the power of Photoshop.
Yes. Well, this was going to be my point, right? So firstly, DIY, it's not as easy as it sounds, right? Taking a photo is not just setting it on auto and pushing the button. There's so much to consider, you know, what type of lens, how that affects the depth of field, the depth of view, the exposure. There's so many things that a photographer has to consider when they take a photo.
And that's just in the camera. And then you got to think of the environment and the lighting and the weather and et cetera.
Absolutely. There's just so much to it. Now, if you are good enough with a camera that you can do some DIY stuff, what I would recommend is at least send your images out for professional post-production, right? So find a service that does do image editing, and there are a few out there, and you can find them on a lot of the outsource websites. I mean, Pixel Partners only does it for other professionals, so we do it for other graphic designers, for other advertising agencies and photographers. But if you're a business owner and you're trying to do this DIY, go and find a service that will do professional image post-production. Because that post-production is a massive part of a high-quality finished image today, right? Most cameras take good photos straight out of camera, but a great photo needs work.
Well said. We haven't even touched on copyright and royalties yet, but...
oh, my God, copyright and royalties. Come on, let's do it.
So we use a stock photo library, and, you know, we've been using them for probably 6 or 7 years or thereabouts, and I had a call from them. They actually called me from the States, and they said we're using their images illegally. And I was like, what? You know, that just shocked me. And so we went through all the rules. Apparently they changed their rules around 3 years ago, but, you know, I don't read their terms and conditions every week. But the point is that they said we cannot use their images at all for anything that's going to be in reproduction in print. You can use anything on websites or anything, you know, web-related, but you can't use their images for print unless you buy their, you know, special license for it, which is, you know, like ridiculous amount, like probably 3 or 4 times more expensive. So, you know, in a lot of cases, we were using these images for T-shirt designs. And, yeah, it just turns out, I mean, our clients in the rag trade, for instance, won't fork out that much money for, you know, using one of the images. So, yeah, it just turns out that we're not allowed to use those images for T-shirt designs anymore.
And you know what? There are a lot of people out there using images illegally, right?
Yeah. And I said that to the guy, man. I said, so what, you're calling me to pretty much say stop using our services. I said, and are you going to do this to probably 90% of the businesses out there that are using your services? Because that's how many I think would be using them.
Yeah, but you know what though? Eventually there will be a precedent where they can take action and they can actually bill you for that usage. At the moment, I think they're just testing the waters, like the stock libraries and photographers. I mean, this is a pretty big issue, you know, like illegal image use is something that people do mostly unknowingly.
Exactly. That's my whole point, man. It's like, you know, you've got these images on your stock library, you know, and you let people download them and use them, but then there's a rule around how you're meant to use them. I don't know. It's just seems a bit odd. There needs to be some more clarity around the whole use.
Look, you know, it's like a lot of things, that stupid little terms and conditions box that if you scroll, it'll take you 3 hours to scroll to the bottom.
Yeah.
And everyone just ticks the box and says, I agree, right? But the reality is you kind of need to know where your images have come from
and
what permissions you have. I mean, let's take our subscriptions, Greg. You know, I know that, and I haven't double-checked my current one, but I know in a past subscription that if I stopped subscribing, then I no longer had the right
Correct.
To use those images.
Yep, that's another,
so
yep.
what am I supposed to do? Call all my clients from the last 5 years and say, sorry, we have to pull all these images off your media.
Legally, yes.
Yeah, you know, so I'm more careful today about checking that once I have passed it on to my client, they can continue to use it, you know. There are, you know, issues around quantity. You know, the most stock libraries say you can only, if you're doing it on a print run, you can only use it up to whatever it
X
might
amount,
be, 100,000 prints, right? So if you're doing over 100,000 prints.
In a certain time frame as well.
Yeah, you need a different type of license. So, you know, you have to think about this sort of stuff. And that goes for commissioning photographers as well, right? Photographers will often have things in their contract that are just a standard. You need to make sure that's not going to conflict with the way that you're using your image. So, you know, like I have in my contracts for photography, it says you have the right to use the image. It's unlimited use today. Like I used to charge by use. So if they wanted to use it online versus on a billboard, they would get billed 2 different royalties for that. Mm-hmm. And there are still a lot of photographers that do that, and then you have to renew your royalty if you want to continue to use it after that time or for a different use. So I do a lot of, you know, unlimited royalties, but they're not allowed to resell that image. So they can't take my image that I've taken for them and sell it on a stock library, right? So, and that may or may not be a problem for a business, but make sure you read that contract. Get somebody to take the time to check the terms and conditions. As much of a pain as it is, it's actually going to become a bigger and bigger problem as time goes on. Because technology today, Greg, technology is what's going to catch us out. Just like they knew you were using that image incorrectly, it's getting easier for the image owner to track them down. I mean, there's talk about imaging services for photographers where they can simply, you know, drag their image into that service and it will scour the web for anybody that's using that image.
Wow, that's clever.
Yeah. I mean, look, just look at Google Images. Did you know, and I know a lot of people do know this, but did you know that you can actually grab an image and drag it into the Google Images interface?
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. So if you grab an image and you drag it into the Google Images, so images.google.com, it will tell you every instance where that image or an image similar to it that looks like it is being used.
Wow, I'm going to try that right now.
and this is the thing, right? So not originally when a lot of that stuff was done, it was done via the metadata. So it's looking for those additional tags in the back of when it was taken, who took it, you know, if there's unique things in there that they can correlate with other images. But they're actually getting better and better at recognizing faces, recognizing scenery. And eventually, you know, stock libraries and photographers will be able to find you if you're using the images illegally and bill you for it. And I genuinely believe as a professional photographer, it is just a matter of time before somebody sets a precedent to say, well, because you've used my image for the last 10 years illegally, you can't just say, I'm sorry, and pull it down. Yeah. You need to pay for that use in retrospect.
Yep. Absolutely, yeah. Big legal shit fight. Hey, yeah, I've just used that, man, that dragging the image in. That's amazing. That's really cool.
It's good, isn't it?
Thanks for the tip.
And you know what? Hey, designers, that is a cool way to check if the image you're about to use on somebody else's website is really common or not.
That is a killer tip.
Download the stock image, drag it into the Google image search, and look for who else is using it.
Wow, yep.
I mean, the last thing you want is the same image on some scungy, dirty porn site.
Exactly.
Mate, do you have anything else that you want to add to copyright and royalties?
No, I'm just playing around with this tool, mate. I got a heap of images on my desktop. I love it.
Mate, your story of getting the phone call, I mean, that would just freak me out.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty freaky. I mean, you know, little old me.
Did you ask them how they worked it out?
He just looked at the website. You know, we've got a website where we, you know, sell T-shirt designs and...
But how did they get to your website? Like, how did they know that that was you?
I guess they scour the internet for, you know, just websites in general, and they probably noticed their images being used.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, it's probably just very random. You know, but
well, they must have people out there whose job it is to find people who are not using their service correctly, because that obviously costs them money. And hey, if it's costing them money, they can't provide better images to us, the designers and the professionals.
I just had a thought though, maybe they've just gone off my email address and then looked at my web, you know, because it's got my domain in it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
it's still a big effort to go to.
It is, yeah.
When you really think about it,
yeah. So. But they could, yeah, just look at the domains of all of their subscribers, and yeah, just look at those domains first. That'd be the first port of call.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, my last two things about copyright and royalties.
Yeah.
Right? Firstly, you must know where your images came from, right? Don't plead ignorance, right? If you don't know where it came from, don't use it, right? Simple, because somebody must own that image. And it may be royalty-free, but unless you know, don't take the risk, right? And the second thing is, do not take images from Google Image Search. I mean, I get clients all the time, go, I've got 15 great images. I'm like, where'd you get them? Oh, we just dragged them off Google Image Search.
Mm.
Whose are they? Oh, we don't know. It doesn't work that way. You know, somebody owns those images. You wouldn't like it if somebody was stealing your business identity, so why would you do it to somebody else? You know, to me, it's something I'm fairly passionate about. So take the time, you know, try and investigate it. You know, Google search the file name, you may find the owner, and that owner may be happy for you to use it. I've actually done that before. We found a great image online, and we Googled the file name, and we tracked it back to the original owner, and we asked them if we could use it. We offered to pay them, and they said, no, you can use it, no problems.
Yeah, okay, like, oh, yeah.
Fabulous, you know. So we credited that photographer for that image. But I just thought it was the right thing to do. You
know? Yeah, that's a really good thing to do.
All right. Anyway, cool. Where are we up to?
Well, have you got any more copyright, you know, topics? Or, you know,
bits, Greg, I could go on for hours.
You could, man. I've got to stop you. We've been on for a while.
Yeah, let's do it. Why don't we get into our killer tips on listener action? What do you got, big fella?
Well, look, I think for me it's just when you're choosing imagery to start with, like if you don't have a business identity at all, then just think about your imagery as a whole and not just an individual image. So you might have a blog, you know, content marketing strategy. You want those images to be consistent throughout, to be consistent with your brand of your website and your social media, etc. So try and think of it as a whole as opposed to individual images, and it'll help just, you know, with congruency across your brand.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And don't forget, when we're talking images too, especially with things like blogs and social media, that includes graphics, that includes technical drawings, it includes illustrations, mascots. You know, think about them as an overall. I mean, like you say, there's no point having a mascot that conflicts with the photos that you might be using on Facebook, that conflicts with your, you know, the way you present the technical information that you draw up. So, yeah, definitely think about it overall.
Nice. What you got?
Well, my tip is kind of along those lines. It's firstly, review your images, right, and check if they align with your brand. Don't review them in context, right? So don't review the images on the brochure or on the website. Get them all, drag them out or screenshot them or whatever you've got to do, put them in one file and look at them with an image viewer like iPhoto or Bridge or whatever it might be, and just look at the images and say to yourself, does this work for my brand? Does this group of images, without all the other stuff around it, you know, gel with what we're trying to say for our brand, right? And that is your starting point for your image library. So my listener action would be start an image library, you know, a central place where you keep all and any images that you use in your brand that's easily accessible for your graphic designer, for anybody that needs it for marketing. And just keep building on that every day. You know, have a I like this folder where if you see an image that you like that somebody else is using, grab that image, drop it in, because then the next time you're in the stock library or the next time your designer's looking for an image, they've got a reference point of things that, that will work for your brand.
Good tip, man.
Awesome. Mate, have you got anything else for us today?
No, buddy. Just want to thank the listener, as always, for hanging in there and getting through all this stuff. And, yeah, we hope, you know, if you've got any comments about this episode, leave them in the show notes on the website.
Oh, yep, or on iTunes. We'd love a 5-star review. And I am done. I feel really good. I had my rant at the beginning of the podcast. I really enjoy talking about images and photos. So, mate, that was awesome. Thank you very much, Greg. And thank you, listener. We'll catch you next time.
Will do. Thanks, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Real Magic Podcast. Hear more at therealmagic.com.